America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Loving is what I got. I said, remember that. Loving is what I got. I said, remember that.
On our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Goof.
Move over Milwaukee, Chicago brewers may soon flip the Windy City to the Craft Brew City. Breweries have been popping up like weeds across Chicago and the suburbs. Their beers are flooding liquor stores, dominating restaurant taps, and getting plenty of social media buzz.
We spent maybe $40,000 getting this business running.
Brian Buckman is the head brewer of Illuminated Brew Works on Chicago's Near West Side, and like a lot of young brewers, he's an IT guy.
I used to own an IT consulting firm for the past few years. I've been working at a mobile app company here in the city.
And he believes a big reason for the craft brew explosion can be traced to social media.
This kind of niche, personalized marketing that people have grown accustomed to, where they want to have a very personal experience. And craft brewing provides that, you know, not only because there's so many different styles and so many different flavors and so many different creative recipes that are being made that can you can really find the beer that speaks to you. But you can also do, you know, things like this, where you can come out to a brewery and you can have a personal interaction with the people that make the beer.
He says every day he learns a little more about this budding industry. For Saturday Night Special, I'm Ryan Burrow, WGN News.
You heard the man. It's the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this fine, fine evening. As you know, this is the show where we explore topics in a bit more detail and a bit deeper than sometimes we can during the work week. We unpack them and we let them breathe a bit, and we bring all the many points of view out into the open for very thoughtful discussion about all kinds of topics that are right here in Chicago. Throughout the show, all week long, you can follow me on social media. I'm at Amy Guth, G-U-T-H, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, we're taking your calls and text messages all evening long, 312-981-7200. Let me do that again, 312-981-7200. My friends, tonight's show, as you might have guessed from that dispatch from our good friend Ryan Burrow, it's all about, we are taking a look at the art, the science, the business, and community of an industry that contributes over $56 billion to the U.S. economy and makes up nearly 2% of GDP. What is that? Yep, we're talking about craft beer. What might seem easy to dismiss as like a hipster fad or something like that, in fact, is a complex, sophisticated, and very nuanced world, more so than many of us might think. And while craft beer and its many variations might be a little bit intimidating sometimes, and I am totally with you on that, because sometimes there's a lot to know and a lot to take in, tonight we have lined up the perfect group of people to help us explore and discuss and learn all about it. Riding shotgun with me tonight is author, entrepreneur, and craft beer industry professional Jesse Valenciana. We'll also hear from a range of expert voices and industry doers to help sort the hay and share their knowledge. In the first hour, my friends, we're going to look at the evolution of craft beer in the U.S. and then right here in Chicago. And then a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk to some Chicago craft brewers who are doing really fascinating and cool things around sustainability, high-end food, beer pairing, and challenging gender diversity. That's all coming up right here on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN. It's a Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us. Everybody do the Charleston to that fun Prohibition-era jam, because we are talking all about beer tonight. Specifically, we're talking about craft beer right here in Chicago, and there's so much to get into. We think we know beer, but my friends, you don't. And that's why I have assembled for you a team of experts, including riding shotgun with me tonight is Jesse Valenciana. He's author of two books, founder and leader of Manbecue, and is a beer industry professional at Chicago's Goose Island Beer Company. And joining us in studio also is Michael Kaiser, founder of goodbeerhunting.com, a beer and craft focused consulting and storytelling platform. I'm going to turn your microphones on so you can all say hello. Hi.
Hello.
Oh, in stereo. That was good. So I want to start by spending this first hour really kind of talking about the craft beer industry as a whole, because there's so much to it. And as I said in the intro, I think that sometimes people sort of dismiss it as perhaps a bit hipster or kind of faddish. But in fact, it's really quite complex. There's a lot to it, and it's certainly here to stay. And one thing that's really that's really made an impression on me as I know more about that world is that for something that's an over $50 billion industry in the U.S., it has such a wonderful community vibe to it and really feels very person to person, which is something that's really struck me about that world. But maybe start by telling us a bit about Good Beer Hunting and how you got into that world.
Yeah, sure. Well, for me, it was opening up a Saison DuPont at the Map Room here in Chicago. That was kind of the wake-up call for me in terms of what beer could be.
And if you're going to have a beer wake-up call, the Map Room is a pretty good place to do it.
Yeah, not too shabby. I got lucky with that one. But, and so it was just a wake-up call to me that beer had this great expression possibility to it, that it could smell like different things, it could taste like different things. The textures of beer were very different, and the stories and styles behind them. I'm somebody who just kind of, when I get hooked on something, I want to know all about it, and beer sort of hasn't stopped letting me learn, which is pretty great about it 10 years later. So, that was my gateway. I bought the URL goodbeerhunting.com the day after I had my first Saison DuPont.
Wow, you committed.
Well, mostly just as a way to keep track of what I was drinking. I just went and bought every bottle of beer I could find that said Saison on it at the time, and I just wanted to talk to my buddy Doug about it. This was before we had smartphones where you could track every single thing you were drinking like you can now. So that was my way of keeping track.
And kind of talk us through just what you've seen of the craft beer industry just in the last few years, because I think it's right now entering or has entered very clearly the mainstream narrative. But for a while, it was a bit fringe.
Sure.
And then particularly in Chicago, what you've seen.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of parallels in American culture in general. If you look at the music industry, right, things start off on the fringe and gradually work their way towards the center. And the closer you get to the center, the less the people who are on the edge want anything to do with it. So I almost count it as a luxurious position to be in for craft beer to be dismissed as hipster. It's like, oh, wow, we really made it. But I would say that over the last few years, the theme I've seen of craft beer is that it's diversifying in almost every way imaginable, whether it's the types of beers that are made, the way in which they're made, where it's being made, and even the business models behind a lot of these breweries that are starting up. They all have very different intentions than sort of the original kind of Sierra Nevadas of Ken Grossman's era, which all had sort of kind of the same ethos, same types of beers they were trying to make. They're all trying to do the same thing because it was just such a seed of an idea to even be able to make a hoppy beer. We've gone from that to being able to resurrect ancient styles of German beers like I've brought here today. People who have their own approach, and I love the diversity of craft beer right now. I love that it can go in almost any direction imaginable.
And certainly we have a lot to talk about Chicago-wise tonight, but what other regions of the U.S. do we see big beer scenes happening?
Yeah, well, Chicago's always been one of the best distributed markets in the U.S. That means if you make beer in the U.S., chances are you sell it in Chicago. But only recently have we been a great beer producer. So we've gone through our own little renaissance here. But outside of here, it's places like Seattle, San Diego, Vermont is sort of a hotbed of craft beer right now. We've seen these little communities pop up and grow all over the U.S., and every sort of small and mid-sized city kind of has its own little thing happening right now with craft beer in their own little way, and they're all kind of at a different phase of their development. So you almost can't go anywhere in the U.S. right now and not find a small craft brewery startup or one that's been there for 5 or 6 years, doing its own thing.
And what are some of the things that you see happening right now that you are most excited about?
Boy, I guess I see a lot of influence from American craft beer kind of pervading the rest of the world right now, whether you go to Europe, even Southeast Asia. I just got back from Australia, and I see a lot of Americans' values or the kinds of things that we're interested in drinking and tasting starting off their own little kind of pockets of influence all around the world right now. So we all grew up drinking German lagers, essentially. And that was the way.
Did you grow up drinking
beer?
Everybody
started somewhere.
In a baby bottle.
But I mean, that was the influence that we knew was, German beers were the beers that we drank, in America for the longest time. And now we see that influence going the opposite way to where the Reinheitsgebot, the purity laws in Germany, are almost under siege right now because Americans have influenced their culture so much that the people there want to drink American style beers. And you can't even brew some of those under the German purity laws. And so I see America's culture being exported all around the world the way I saw jazz being exported in the 40s. Well, obviously didn't see that personally, but
just
looking back at some of these metaphors.
He drank beer bottles. This guy.
Timeless.
Right. Well, that's really interesting because I think we usually, I think we have a bit of an inferiority complex to think a lot of things that happen in Europe. Right.
And America has an inferiority complex?
No. I think we do in some
You're
ways.
Crazy.
Like when we think about, especially, well, in the beverage world anyway, we think about wine in that way, you know, like, well, champagne, but we have sparkling Napa stuff, right?
gotcha.
You know, and so I think it's interesting that we're, you know, we've done American beer in such a way that we're getting note for it in other parts of the
and
world.
And we've certainly done it in a very American way where for the first 15 or 20 years, you know, craft beer was all about extremes. You were talking to the guys in here from the sports show earlier. He's like, don't you think craft beer has gotten a little out of hand with some of its flavors? And I see a blueberry ale. And certainly, you know, Americans are all about extremes when it comes to anything associated with the palate. But I think we've gone through a phase now where we're much more interested in sort of the delicacy or the uncommon flavors you can get in a beer that are made from really old processes and really unique processes. And the pendulum swings.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see that within a lot of industries, right? In the music industry, we went to downloads, and then it became very special and luxurious to have the vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, and in publishing, we have the Kindle download, but the very embossed, beautiful, old school, hand-bound book suddenly became a thing. So it's not surprising that in this world, too, there's kind of a callback to the old school way of doing things, certainly.
It's almost like, you know, food did the same thing. For the longest time, New York was the mecca for fine dining, and what started happening was these guys that were working for these big chefs in New York wanted to make their name for themselves. So they move out to cities like Chicago, and that's how these food scenes, that's why like Restaurant Row has become what it is, because these guys were sous chefs for these big guys, and they're like, you know, I want something more approachable, less pretentious, just like beer. And, you know, trying different styles, you know, and they didn't want to, you know, the guys in New York were doing like Japanese Mexican fusion, just like crazy stuff because they could. And the guys working for them were kind of like, this is BS. Like, I want to do something real. And they kind of scale it back, did a more indie thing. But still, their food was just as good, if not better, than these, you know, decadent places. And then now you've got the scene in Chicago, which is already kind of not over the hump, but it's up there. But now the guys that were sous chefs for the guys that left New York are now going to like Louisville, Nashville. Mm-hmm. So all these like really nice food scenes are popping up in other places, and it's just like brewing.
You got to find a little pond to be a big fish in.
Yeah. It's great, and I love how, you know, food and beer are kind of on that same trajectory. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, and I think like a word about the pretentious idea, right? Because I think we think of wine as being very unapproachable, very pretentious. It has its own vocabulary. It has, you know, this very elite lingo around it. But in fact, beer has its own lingo, and it's but it has a more approachable, and in fact I think it's a lot more complex, really. I mean, we're just talking about grapes with wine. We're talking about a lot of different stuff with beer, you know, that really is really complex. And I don't know that people are thinking about it that way, or at least they weren't. Most people weren't until craft brewing started to become a thing.
Well, when's the last time you were able to walk in, you know, before craft beer came along, you couldn't walk into a brewery and see anything. I mean, that process was just as veiled as winemaking was to a lot of people. But with some of these smaller breweries, you walk into their tap room and you're sitting right across from the tanks that beer's being fermented in, and naturally you're going to start asking questions and pointing at things.
That's a really good point. And I think, too, it's brought us to a point where we see pairings happen. You know, I always saw wine pairings, but never a beer pairing, which is for the reasons of, you know, wine being just a type of grape and then beer being all these different ingredients in different, you know, portions. I would say, and maybe that's going to be a controversial statement to some listeners, but I would say it's probably much harder to accomplish a beer pairing than a wine pairing.
Hmm.
I don't say that I wouldn't say it's harder, but it's, you have to put a lot more thought into it. You know, the thing about wine being unapproachable, it has rules. So there's a lot of wines that you can honestly say, this does not pair with that. But with beer, you know, first of all, it's four ingredients initially against one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Against fermented grapes. And so now when you're making a dish, you've got four at least opportunities to pair or contrast or accentuate on that plate. So that's – and there's so many other things you could add, other ingredients you could add on to this beer that will also go with like a different dish. So I've been doing food and beer pairings for a long time. And when I first started it was really just kind of like, hey, let's pair these burgers with these beers. And I would talk to my beer nerd friends that knew more about beer than I did. And I was like, well, these are the flavors that I'm getting from this. And they really taught me how to start pairing. And then you start learning more. And then like just all these roads just open. You're like, oh, my gosh, I don't have to be stuck to this one thing. I could do so many things. And again, there's those rules that apply for wine that don't apply for beer. Like there's always a way to pair some beer with something.
Absolutely. But I mean, in the wine world, this, I mean, how many people feel confident pairing wines with foods? I mean, I'm one of those people in a restaurant. I'm just happy to ask the server mm-hmm. or the sommelier, like, what do you think I would pair with this? I do the same thing in a bar. I mean, most people consider me a beer expert at this point, but I'm still happy to ask for somebody's input if they know their menu and they know their beer list really well. And people should have the same confidence doing that in a beer bar, especially if it's a beer-focused bar, as you would with a sommelier in a restaurant. Just turn it over to somebody else. You don't have to do the job.
Well, yeah. I think that's a definition of expert we all wrestle with for different things, right? I think, to me, part of expertise is knowing a lot about a particular area, but also being willing to ask and to talk sure. and to learn. And I think it's when people, which I don't see a lot of in the wine world, right? Hmm. That's when you see a lot of people, nope, I know everything, thanks, bye. I am a sommelier, you will tell me nothing, right? And I get a very different vibe from the beer world because it is so much more approachable to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things about beer that I think that make it more approachable in ways that wine is not. Price is one of them. I mean, most beers you can go and get a six pack. I mean, I just got this at Whole Foods for $12. That's not bad for six beers. I mean, that's cheaper than most sodas and bottled waters versus a wine that you might think to get a really great wine, you'd have to spend $40. So the price entry point of most beers is pretty low. And so you can roll the dice on something. If you don't like it, you're not out that much.
That's true. Although there are those really fancy, beautiful bottles that are big and tall bottles. You can't possibly finish yourself, at least not in good shape the next day, right? That are a little intimidating, I think, because they feel like more of a commitment. You don't necessarily think about buying
I think of those as sharing bottles for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a share plate.
Do you drink an entire bottle of wine, though?
No, don't judge me.
Not on Tuesdays.
Not today, no. But this guy out here on Michigan Avenue waving at us says he does.
Yeah. I think he's got half of one already gone.
Yeah, possibly.
I think he's got a box of wine.
That's the way. That's the way. So what things are you seeing in, question to both of you really, in the craft beer world, now that it is more established, now that it's not a fringe thing, what do you see, what things are you seeing that you're most excited about, that you really see where a lot of innovation is occurring?
Hmm. I like that. Not everything is an IPA anymore.
Yeah, good Lord.
Yeah. No, I mean, for work, I travel the country. Well, now, you know, all over outside the United States. And it's really cool just to see where everybody's at. And what I like is that we're kind of going back to more of these traditional styles. Because for the longest time, we were just being American. And we're like, we're going to make the fruitiest beer. We're going to make a peanut butter or whatever with... You know,
I drew the line at the pumpkin spice when pumpkin spice craze reached beer. I'm like, I can't.
I mean, you brought a peanut butter beer tonight.
It's delicious. We will make fun of me because it's okay. Delicious. But no, you know, there's a lot of these people that were doing these crazy things and these IPAs. It was like the hoppier the better. And now people are kind of like, let's chill. Let's make a really good, you know, Rausch beer. It's, again, what Michael said, these traditional styles are now in vogue.
Pilsners are taking over the country right now. Yeah. And it's because people, I think, and they're pale pilsners. They're done with an American tweak to it. They're a little hoppier than you would get from a traditional European pilsner. But it's bringing people back to a place where you can taste the layers of flavor and you could smell the different aromas in a beer without being overwhelmed by things. And I think that's one of the best parts about craft beer hitting the mainstream, is that we're now running into a customer that I think is way more honest than craft beer geeks are. Craft beer geeks get obsessed over very specific things, whether it's aesthetics or who owns a brewery or where it was made, what type of yeast it's using, how hoppy it is, how tall those IBUs are, and the level of the ABV. Those things are really attractive to beer geeks. Whereas the mainstream audience is just going to sit there and just be like, I don't like this beer. They don't really care who made it or how it got made. They're going to decide whether they like it or not. And I think that's actually a really great part of what's happening to craft beer right now, is it's kind of growing up a little bit. It's having to understand what it means to make a balanced beer that's going to appeal to a wider audience. And of course, I don't want all beers to go that way. I'm a beer geek. I love these things that are specialized and very unique in certain ways. But I think a brewer tends to take a more appreciative approach to making a beer when they know they're making it for a wider audience that might not care about some of the technical details of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, that it might speak to that kind of approachability and lack of pretension that people are willing to speak so honestly about a beer, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you speak that way about wine, people probably, well, maybe you're not very sophisticated.
Like
but if you're like, no, that's not the beer for me, I think people, even if they don't know a lot about craft beer, I think they have an awareness that there's a lot of it and that there's a lot to know.
I see a lot of people that are very willing to learn and that are interested. In, you know, from my work standpoint, there was a while where we were trying to do these events that were just really attracting these beer nerds. And for me, I saw that, and they were not the most welcoming people. So I kind of started changing my events that I was creating was trying to appeal to a more general, broader audience, because the beer nerd community is like tiny,
mm-hmm.
and the other fringe people want in and they want to know. So for me, it was like balancing that and having these events where the beer nerds still wanted to go, but the other people that weren't beer nerds felt comfortable there.
Yeah. Which speaks to, I think, that community kind of feeling within the craft beer world. All right, my friends, we are talking all about craft beer tonight. Writing co-pilot is Jesse Valenciana. He's the author of two books, founder of Mambacue and industry professional at Chicago's Goose Island Beer Company. And we're talking with Michael Kaiser. He's the guy behind goodbeerhunting.com. You can follow them both on Twitter and all that good stuff. I'll be tweeting out their Twitter handles on the break and all that. But we're going to take a little break, get you to news. And when we come back, we're talking about this big industry and how it fits right here in Chicago. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Information on a booming industry in the Windy City. How about this? Beer is taking Chicago by storm these days, with Goose Island becoming the standard bearer for nearly 50 so-called craft brewers in the area. What's behind this new trend? Well,
WGN. I'm having a meltdown over here because my headphones are tangled up in my chair. So I am completely stuck without them. So it's all good. Anyway, my friends, it is the Saturday night special and we are talking all about craft beer tonight. And we have an honorary co-host with us, Jesse Valenciana. He's the author of two books, founder and leader of Mambacue, and a beer industry professional at Chicago's Goose Island Beer Company. We're also joined by Michael Kaiser, founder of goodbeerhunting.com, She's trying to get the headphones untangled from this chair. It is complete chaos in the studio right now. Anyway, so Michael Kaiser's here. And also now we're joined by Brian Taylor. He is the brewer behind Winer Brewing right here in Chicago. So I'm going to turn all of your microphones on, even though I can't hear you because I don't have headphones. So welcome. We have been talking all about craft beer, specifically in the U.S. And because it's, for a while, it was like a bit of a fringe thing and a bit of a special thing and kind of a off to the side thing. But it's so much entered the mainstream narrative now that we have to look at it from a lot of different angles. And so, Brian, you have experienced the brewing life in a lot of different cities in the country before you came to Chicago. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. I'm quite literally a lifer in the brewing industry. I started actually during college, the stereotypical get free beer while you work in school type situation. Worked for Flying Dog Brewery, and that was kind of where I really fell in love with brewing. And at that time, you know, there really weren't many breweries around. Living in Denver, it was kind of a different situation than elsewhere, because Denver actually did have five or six breweries back at that time. Graduated college, fell in love with brewing, and thought, you know, maybe I could make a career out of this thing, and ended up going to brewing school, both in Chicago and in Germany. Got a brewing science degree. They do have those.
There's a degree for everything.
I know.
But I love that one is a real one.
And I found it, for sure. So, yeah, and got a brewing science degree. And then,
where was that in Chicago?
It was at the Siebel Institute, actually, and then Deumann's Academy in Munich. And once I got back here, it was, you know, early 2000s. It was still very hard to find, you know, every city had their brewery, but that was basically about it. And I was lucky enough to get a call from Boulevard Brewing Company, and I worked for them for 3-4 years, and my mentor Stephen Powles over there kind of taught me all about Belgian beers, and that's where I fell in love with the Belgian style. We started doing some barrel aging, we used wild yeast, and from there I got a job with Goose Island. And obviously Goose Island is where I learned how to barrel age, and, you know, with Greg Hall being there, it was like a whole nother world for alternate fermentations and things like that. So that's kind of where I am now, mm-hmm. and figured out what I would be brewing for my own brewery.
Sure. And at what point did you decide it was time to strike out on your own to create Winer Brewing?
Well, I mean, I'm the typical guy. I always wanted to start a brewery. Since like 2000, I was trying, and it's one of those things where you have to meet the right people. You have to have the right idea. And in the meantime, I honed my skills. I worked for Goose. I had a great time meeting tons of smart people that taught me a lot of things. And, you know, while I was learning, I was meeting new people, and I actually met my partner, Rhea Neary, about 3 years ago in a bar, no less. We started talking about like what we would do if we opened a brewery, like what types of beers we would have. And with her help, we met some investors, we got some things going, and right now we're about to open Winer Beer Company on the South Side.
Excellent. And so, you know, right before the break, we were talking a bit about kind of the way the craft beer industry in the United States has kind of changed over the last couple of years. And so from your perspective, having, you know, worked right inside it as a brewer in different cities, where have you seen the biggest changes in the last couple of years in particular?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, Chicago's one of the more insane things I've ever seen, because when I moved here in 2007, Goose Island was the only brewery, the craft brewery in town. And that was it. And, you know, throughout the years, you know, the last 5 years, another brewery keeps opening, another one opening. And each one kind of has its own little niche, like Michael was saying. And it's no longer just your pale ales, your IPAs, your nut brown. Actually, I remember at Goose, the day we talked about oatmeal stout not selling very well. And that's a total sign of like where the beer industry is, because that was such a huge seller back in early 2000s.
Bring back the nut brown.
Right.
Well, it's back. Winter ale.
It was in the mix packs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So delicious.
You guys just had a moment over a beer. I didn't even want to say anything.
This is like
you guys
a family reunion for me.
I know. You guys were having a little bromantic moment right there.
I think you made a great point about the Chicago. Most of the beer markets that I see around the country have, you know, it's almost all IPAs, or there's one brewery doing something unique. More and more they're getting diverse, but Chicago has always been a diverse beer city. And if you just look at the styles of beer that I think have been brewed and very popular in Chicago, and I think a big part of that has to do with what Jesse was saying about the culinary renaissance that happened in Chicago. I think so much of the beer that's being made here is sort of being influenced by our chef culture and just the range of flavors and textures and aromas that we're interested in. I think Chicago has probably the most diverse beer culture in terms of styles than any other city in the country that I've seen.
Yeah,
I agree. And, you know, it's funny, like California, I remember when we were first starting barrel aging at Goose, the wine barrel aging side, and we were trying to get some wine barrels. A couple of guys had come up with the recipe Juliet, and we were getting wine barrels from this Sonoma winery. We got four of them, and it was kind of this new thing for us, and I remember us calling like Russian River and people who have done it for a few years prior to us, and you know, trying to understand what was going on in those barrels, what we had to do, and it was a totally new experience for us. And you know, as the years went on, obviously now Goose has about 10,000 wine barrels going, but at that time we were trying to sell Juliet and Lolita back in 2007, and I mean, people did think it was like a rancid beer because it was a sour, and it was hard to get that consumer to realize, oh, this is what it's supposed to taste like. And now it's gone the complete other way, where people are actually seeking out sour beers, mm-hmm. which is, it's a proud moment for me, especially because, you know, we've been trying to get people to drink these types of beers for so long.
And I mean, I think as you're saying this, I'm thinking about the way people have to kind of innovate and are allowed to innovate in a new space where there's not really a precedent set, you know. And I'm thinking maybe that's where so much creativity happened in Chicago, because there wasn't really a norm set. There wasn't really a standard set of rules that everybody had to follow. It was kind of an area where a lot of people could play and have fun and be creative. But at what point is peak creativity happening with craft beer?
We've got, if you're talking about Chicago, like I said before, we were one of the most distributed two cities in the country, which means everybody's beer from everywhere was on our shelves long before we were ever making beer ourselves. And so when you look at the shelf in Chicago right now, there's so many other breweries from both coasts we can knock off and put Chicago beer onto a shelf. Yeah. There's plenty of room if you start swapping in and out. Mm-hmm. I would say that Chicago's got a long ways to go before Chicago beer is at any sort of peak.
Well, that's good news then. We like that. I mean, well, you know, you mentioned Siebel, and also Cicerone is here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have these kind of stronghold hubs of beer culture here that I think will keep it a beer city for a very long time, for sure.
Certainly the intelligentsia of beer.
The intelligentsia of beer, yeah.
Like the intelligence center. I mean, just through the academics of beer alone, I think Chicago's always been seen that way.
Yeah, definitely. And so what do you, you know, at what point, you know, do you worry about that innovation? Do you worry about like a lack of original thought going into the craft beer world as so much innovation is happening? Is there a craft beer bubble?
It's almost like there is now, we're going back so that the innovation is, like we were saying, going back to classic styles. So it's, the innovation back then was working with barrels, and now it's kind of like not devolving, but, you know, it's
going back to its roots in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot about people's taste too. And I mean, there, so many people are joining the craft beer segment that weren't necessarily drinking craft beer, which is, you know, the good thing about the craft beer situation right now is people are, we have the millennials who are actually enjoying craft beer right from the start. Whereas, you know, you try to get my dad to drink my own beer, he's like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Thanks.
You know, and so like, if you think about it, they're going to be drinking craft beer for life. And so I think as long as we have a standard and keep to that standard and keep innovating without going overboard, I heard these guys talking about like crazy IPAs and things like that. It does hit a point where you're like, this is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, I think the consumer is really good at sniffing those out. And, you know, those breweries that are maybe trying to just go overboard or crazy, they'll definitely, they might not last as long.
Yeah, the clock's ticking on that.
Yeah, fair enough. We're talking all about craft beer tonight, specifically craft beer in Chicago and people that are doing really interesting things in this hub of a beer city that we are in right now, my friends. We're talking with Jesse Valenciana, Michael Kaiser, and Brian Taylor. We'll be right back in just a bit to keep talking all about this craft beer world in Chicago and specifically how it is this unpretentious and very accessible world to all. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. We gotta let that play a minute because it's so pretty and dreamy. All this Prohibition era music, that's what we're playing tonight because we're talking all about beer, craft beer in particular, here on the Saturday Night Special on WGN. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight. We're taking your calls and text messages at 312-981-7200. And of course, I'm keeping an eye on Twitter and Facebook all evening long. As I said, we're talking all about craft beer tonight and the drinking it, the making of it, the talking about it, the thinking about it, the studying of it, all of those things, the business of it, the community, all of those things. And right before the break, I said something about what an accessible world it was and how it was so much more accessible than the wine world. And I believe I was challenged on that right before we went to break. I'm talking tonight with Michael Kaiser. He's the founder of goodbeerhunting.com and Brian Taylor, the brewer behind Winer Brewing, and writing co-pilot with me tonight is Jesse Valenciana. So talk to me about why you have challenged me on the idea of how accessible the beer world is.
Well, I think if we look at the contingent of sort of beer geekery that wants beer to stay a certain way, the things that give them value from beer, they feel like the more mainstream it gets, the less there is of a subculture that makes them special.
As with anything, right?
As with anything. I mean, we saw music is, again, a perfect example of what happens was as bands got bigger, less people, you know, the people who were originally interested in them or felt like they had discovered them or made them who they were,
the classic,
shunned them.
Right. I used to see that band when they played at so-and-so bar. Now that they're at a big venue, I can't. They've jumped the shark.
Which makes you a very important part of their story, I suppose, right?
Let's say yes.
So I think there's, and as we see some of these larger craft breweries now, they're kind of coming into their own. They're either becoming regional or national. Some of them are going international. They're partnering up with bigger strategics, you know, like Anheuser-Busch or Heineken or whoever it is. A lot of folks are starting to write them off as not part of craft beer anymore. And then there's other things. You know, the more popular an IPA gets, the less those beer geeks are seeking it out. Everybody wants that subculture to stay sub. And the bigger it gets, the smaller they want that group to get. And I see one of the big missions, you know, for Good Beer Hunting, and I see Jesse do a lot of great work in this area too, is making sure that we don't let craft beer become the property of a subculture exclusively. I think, you know, the geeky stuff, whether it's about innovation or ingredients or process or understanding the history of something, all that is phenomenal stuff about craft beer. That's the community that I think we all love. But the community that gets really divisive about who is and is not craft, or what is and is not craft, or who's allowed to drink certain things, or who knows what. Like,
I think it's the allowed. That's always where it kind of gets sideways, I think, with anything. It's when people get allowed, you know, you're not allowed to like them. You're not allowed to drink that. You're not allowed to go to that or do that or be that. I think that's when it always kind of gets elitist and kind of iffy and weird.
Absolutely. And so I think right now there's a good contingent of people that are interested in making sure that craft beer does stay open and accessible and welcoming, because that's how it got as big as it is now. Mm-hmm. We're still only about 10% of the market. This is not the time to get insular. We've got so much further to go. Right.
And that's how we got into it though too. I mean, if
Blue Moon was one of my gateways, if I wasn't allowed to drink Blue Moon, I probably would have never bothered.
Honker's Ale and Newcastle were like my gateway beers.
Yeah.
Brian, what was your gateway beer?
I actually had a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale at a fish show in like 1997. I was sold.
That is the perfect answer.
The fact that you remember it.
It was such a typical answer, too.
But it's excellent. Perfectly unassailable. Nobody can talk shit about it.
Nobody can touch that at all. So you know, as we're talking about accessibility and kind of praising the beer world for how it's so much more open than the wine world, at the same time, the rise of the Cicerone certification has happened, right? Which is at once legitimizing to the beer world, and for those of you who don't know, the Cicerone is, and this is my shorthand for explaining it, it is essentially like a sommelier for beer if you're Cicerone certified. So on one hand, that certainly legitimizes the nuanced world of it and the complexity of it, and there's a lot to it. And as we were saying earlier in the show, wine is about grapes. Beer is about a lot of things. There's a lot more ingredients and a lot more to it, and involves a lot more thought. So while it does legitimize it, it also has the potential for possibly making it a less accessible experience. What are your thoughts on Cicerone?
Boy, well, I think the first level of Cicerone speaks to, I think, the intent of Cicerone, which is very different than just pure beer knowledge and sort of elitism. The first level is about service. With all of these great craft beers coming onto the market, different styles, different histories, different ways of being enjoyed, the first level was about training bartenders all over the world how to properly serve a beer. The basics, how to pour it, how to present it, how to smell and make sure it doesn't have any off flavors, it didn't get skunky somehow or something like that. It was really just about making sure that customers got a beer that tasted good, smelled good, and was properly presented, which is just sort of fundamental. I mean, with wine, everybody kind of knows you pour it in a wine glass and you know you have certain types of wine glasses. There's a few. But with beer, there's so many different factors to take into account that it's not just that, you know, that really thick shaker pint that everybody slides over a bar right now. Like, that's not the holistic picture of what a beer can be. And so that first level of Cicerone, I think, was really just about trying to get people up to speed with where beer already was, rather than trying to make it elevated in some unique way. The rest of it is for industry professionals who are really passionate and deeply invested in what beer is as an industry and want to further their knowledge.
Brian, Jesse, your thoughts?
No, I totally agree. I, being a production brewer, I'm on the other side, always have been. And we, you know, as brewers, we brew what we like, we drink what we like. And constantly being in the brewery, tasting different types of beer, you just kind of learn it as you go. And you know what you like, you know what other people are going to like. And so the Cicerone thing for me personally, I'm a simple man. It's a little crazy for me. Just
crazy, like excessive?
Yeah. Like, okay. You know, I honestly haven't really looked into it all that much. And I know, like, everybody at my previous job, that was what they strive to go for. And it's great as a person who is trying to now sell beer in the market. It's awesome to have salespeople that actually know that style of beer. And that's what the Cicerone does. So there is a purpose for it. And, you know, I have to remember that, you know, I'll hire a salesperson off the street. They're not necessarily going to know what I know being in a brewery every single day for the last 15 years. So it's a good thing to have. They'll be able to actually get a step up and sell our product the way we want them to sell it.
I mean, with beers like yours, it comes down to like understanding pH levels.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And like, that's something you're really not going to have a concept of unless you've studied beer, produced it, or Cicerone is one of the avenues in which to be able to be intelligent about that.
Exactly.
For me, it's, you know, being a professional in you know, the craft beer industry, and I do events, I put together events. So it just expands my base of knowledge already. And I'm a big beer nerd still, and I'm passionate about what I do. And, you know, it's, I could see where there might be like some elitism going on for some of the people that are part of it. But most of the people that I've met that are certified Cicerones are just as passionate as me. And again, for me, it's learning more than I already know. And when I look at an event, kind of looking at it from different angles, not just like the event side of it, but like the purpose of the event and the goals that you're making for this event. And I think education is a huge thing. It's when you have this captive audience that wants to get into craft beer, what better way than to educate them about beer? Not just about the beer that we sell, but it's like, sure, obviously drink our beer, but there's so many other beers, like taste different styles. You know, you've got your English IPAs, you've got your German IPAs, and American IPAs, actually. So it's, for me, it's a good way to learn even more that the stuff that I'm already learning.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, I think all valid answers for sure. I think it's really going to depend on what the community does with that as it evolves, right? I mean, my hope is, because I am so, so very impressed by the community aspect of despite being a multi-billion dollar industry, that it is so community driven, that so many people know each other and collaborate. I love the collaboration. I love to hear about a beer and you look at the back of it or read about it and you realize it's a collaboration of this brewery over here and this one across town, and they've just become friends and decided to work together. And I think that's something that maybe is fairly industry specific. I think, again, the only other parallel I could draw would be maybe the music industry, where you see, you know, two artists get together and do sort of like a weird solo thing, right?
or food.
Yeah, sure. I mean, sometimes, but for like a one-off event. But it seems like that's such a cornerstone of really what the craft beer world is. So my hope is that it's really all about you know, knowledge and personal challenge and things like that, and not so much, and I hope it doesn't become a thing like a sommelier. Not to knock a sommelier, but I think people, you know, assume a certain thing about a sommelier.
I'll be surprised if you ever go into a restaurant and ask for the Cicerone. I think it's a little bit more of a behind the scenes kind of a thing. Like, you'll just know that when you go into a better beer bar, they've been trained mm-hmm. one way or another, and Cicerone is one of the ways in which they've probably been trained.
My one fear is if you go to a bar and, you know, if you don't like a certain beer and it's like, well, you know, our beverage manager is a Cicerone, so we're pretty sure that he got only good beers.
Right.
Then he makes you feel like beers aren't that accessible anymore.
I think the goal of Cicerone is for almost anybody in a good beer bar to have been trained in Cicerone to mm-hmm. a certain level, rather than there being, you know, a single entity within that place that's in charge of something bigger.
Well, I hear that. I hear that it's about, you know, customer facing stuff, but I'm also hearing a lot about personal challenge and education.
I love that so much.
You know,
did you see the movie Somme? Where they followed those, I think it was like three or four different sommeliers going for the master.
Right.
God, I would love to see something like that for beer. It'd be a riot. I don't know. I went into that movie thinking those guys were as pretentious as you could possibly get, and I came out just like rooting for every single one of them. I just loved the, they were interested in their own personal knowledge sort of path, and I loved that about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, in beer, there's maybe a dozen master Cicerones.
Yeah, there's 11 master Cicerones.
Yeah.
In the country?
In the world.
Yeah. Okay. As far as I'm concerned, they can be as elitist as they want to be.
Right. You earned it. Right. It's like being a master chef. Do your thing, man. Yeah. There's like six of you in the world. All right, my friends. We are talking all about craft beer tonight. We have been talking about its impact in the U.S. and in Chicago. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the brewing end of it and talk to some people doing some really cool stuff right here in Chicago. Writing co-pilot with me tonight is Jesse Valenciano. We've been talking with Michael Kaiser and Brian Taylor. We'll be right back here in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America,
this is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Love is what I got. I said, remember that. Love is what I got. I said, remember that. Love is.
Climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, you heard the woman. I'm Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. We're taking your calls and text messages at 312-981-7200. And, of course, I'm keeping an eye on social media all night, at Amy Guth on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I thank you for the tweets and comments so far. So, my friends, tonight we are talking all about the craft beer world here in Chicago. My honorary co-host for the night is Jesse Valenciana. He's author of two books, founder and leader of Manbecue, and a beer industry professional at Chicago's Goose Island Beer Company. Company. In the studio with us, we have so many people in here right now. We're doubling up on microphones because we're all friends here. We have Jacob Cimbrano, who is going to tell us about his latest endeavor in the beer world, in the brewing world that he's doing. We have Dee Rodriguez, who is a Goose Island brewer and is going to tell us all about a big win recently that she has had. And we've been talking with Brian Taylor, who's the brewer behind Weiner Brewing, and Michael Kaiser, the founder of Good Beer Hunting, is in the house as well. So I'm going to turn a whole bunch of microphones on at once. There we go. So we've been talking about the craft brew industry and the kind of narratives around it and that sort of thing. But I want to hear from our new guests, especially a little bit about the specific work you're doing as a brewer here in Chicago. Dee, why don't we start with you?
Well, it's great to be here, especially BT, my old boss, is here. Nice to see him again. Right now, I'm actually a cellarman at Goose Island. I've been doing that for 9 months now. Prior to that, I was working as an intern in their barrel program.
And you most recently had a big win of, you had the recipe for the 2015 Proprietors. Yes.
Yes, it is.
Which is very
true.
Exciting,
yeah.
And a huge win, and congratulations to you on
Thank
that.
Thank you. I was just telling Jacob in the green room that I still don't actually really believe it, even though it's sitting right in front of me and it's been released for a little bit now. But yeah, I'm really, really excited, really happy that I got that opportunity.
Excellent. Well, certainly if you even just look at social media, it's going over so well. I love the kind of the way that people jump all over that particular beer and talk all about it every year when it comes out and get super excited about it. And the bottle is so beautiful this year too. I feel like I have one bottle in my house and I feel like I just have to display it. I feel like I can't touch it.
Yes.
It's very beautiful. Well, congratulations. That's a huge win
Thank
for you.
Thank you.
And that's really, really spectacular. And I, of course, have many questions about a woman playing in the boys' club that I have to ask you about because it's certainly, I mean, it's very much a male-dominated industry. There's a lot of men in the brewing world. And so has that part been an obvious part to you? Has that been anything you've ever felt or noticed? Or has it, or you know, earlier we were talking about the community part of it. Has it just, have you just kind of always felt very much part of the community?
Yeah, I've not had a problem with it. I feel actually really comfortable with it. It's never been an issue. I actually lived with 4 frat brothers for 5 years, so I kind of feel right at home.
So you know yeah. what to do, you know
yeah,
how to handle.
It's great, and the guys, all of them that I've worked with are very supportive, and I've learned so much through them, and I'm still learning every day from them. So
that's excellent. And what about, you know, what are you seeing the women in the craft beer world doing? What are you, you know, are you seeing more women lately, or is it kind of always been just few and far between, or how is that looking to you from your perspective?
For me, I mean, I am seeing more lately, and I think that's because I'm a woman, so they like to put us all together a lot. So I've been doing a lot of women in beer events, and I've gotten to meet a lot of really cool people out there. So, yeah, I definitely have encountered a lot more, but it's not something that you typically should see.
You just, you just spoke in front of 200 women in brewing in Dallas, didn't you, last week?
I did. My boss, Brett Porter, asked me to do a speech. It was one of our sales and marketing communication meetings, and they had a women in beer event to kind of get us all together and just kind of network and whatnot. So I was asked to do about a 30-minute speech in front of them, and I did it. It was freaking horrifying. But, I just kind of talked about how I got into craft, how I became a brewer, and then the successes that I've had since I've been brewing. So it was good to meet people.
Well, I was going to ask how the response was afterwards.
I went surprisingly well. For some reason, people were coming up to me and saying they were inspired by my story. Which
I'm not surprised. Not surprising to me at all.
I was a little bit. But, you know, I'm really grateful, and I got to learn from a bunch of other people. Like, there were some of the big time brewers out there. So it was nice to meet them and to be able to just share what I've been through and people mm-hmm. kind of getting inspired by that.
Well,
really
what
meant a lot.
What was your way in to craft beer?
I started as a server at Dry Hop Brewery. It's a small brewery in Chicago. And I just, you know, fell in love with craft beer in general. And on my days off, I volunteered brewing. Did that just to learn like the process behind it, to talk to my customers more. But I ended up just falling in love with the whole production side for it. And I saw that Goose Island had an internship available. So I applied, and well,
and here we are.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that?
That was about a year and a half ago.
Okay, so that's kind of a lot in a year and a half.
Yeah, I'm surprised all that I was able to do in such a short amount of time already.
Well, certainly speaks to your skill and talent for sure. Jacob, talk to us a bit about your big project that you're doing right now, because I think it will be, it's already being talked about quite a bit in Chicago, but well, you guys are going to have to share that microphone, so you're going to have to get right up on that. Act like you're friends with Michael there. There you go. So tell us about that, because people are already talking quite a bit about it, but I think we'll continue to do so.
Right. Well, simply put, it is a brewpub project kind of spearheaded by the Frontera Group and Rick Bayless. I will be their head brewer. It's on 900 West Randolph Street on the West Loop, and I guess that's short version. Long version is that we're just terribly excited, and I'm terribly excited to start making beer, and I think that our focus is, well, you know, we talked a lot about what is our identity going to be and how are we going to fit into this city, and you know, with that comes a lot of questions and what kind of styles of beer are we going to be doing and what is our focus. And so the brewery is called Cruz Blanca. There was an existing Cruz Blanca in Mexico City in 1869, and it was founded by a Alsatian immigrant. So
that's where my people are from. That's very exciting. My people are Alsatian. All right, I'm on board now.
Right. So when looking at what was happening in Mexico City at that time, we can kind of get a gist of what kind of beers we want to produce. So we'll have, and probably Brian talked about this, we'll have Beer de Garde, which is kind of this ubiquitous style, but, you know, it being a French brewer, we feel like, yeah, we can kind of build a good program with Beer de Garde, but also using Mexican ingredients and not necessarily with balance to where they're not overpowering or they're not necessarily stealing the show. They're just in balance with that. And, you know, brewing is really a kind of, you strive to be a product of your environment. And then also there's always some inspiration and motivation behind what you're brewing. So we'll have a bit of French style beer de garde going and focus on German lagers, Austrian lagers, Weiss beers, really European heavy kind of styles of beer. And
what's the timeline on that?
We're looking at early, late spring, early summer right now. We're going to have fun, too. Like, we have wonderful resources with the farming communities around us, from local malts or local-ish malt, Indiana malt, to hops, to just this plethora of wonderful produce and berries and fruits. And that's all kind of things that we want to make an appearance inside of our brewery.
Excellent. My friends, we are talking with super experts here in the craft beer scene here in Chicago, and we're talking all about all of the complex issues around craft beer, because sometimes I think we can oversimplify beer, but it is, because it is indeed very accessible and it is open to all, but yet it is not simple. It's complex. There's nuances. There's lots of details. And as we have been saying, there's a very interesting community around it, especially here in Chicago. When we come back, we're talking more about that, in particular, what some of our guests are doing here in Chicago with craft beer that is super, super cool. We'll be right back here in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Chicago, home of the blues and home to a lot of new brews.
Chicago drinks a lot of beer, and the Chicago beer drinker, the palates are becoming more educated. They're becoming more diverse.
And there's a lot more locally produced beer to sample now with the city's ongoing craft brewing boom.
WGN. It is the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us. We're taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. And of course, we are keeping an eye on social media. I promise you, I'm going to tweet out the Twitter handles of everybody in this room right now, because there are so many people here with so much great expertise. And it's all very, very exciting, because tonight's big topic is about the craft beer scene here in Chicago. My honorary co-host tonight is Jesse Valenciana. He is an author of two books, founder and leader of Manbecue and a beer industry pro at Goose Island. Island's Chicago's Goose Island Beer Company. We are also joined by Michael Kaiser, who's the founder of GoodBeerHunting.com, Brian Taylor, the brewer behind Weiner Brewing, D. Rodriguez, Goose Island Brewer, and Jacob Simbrano, who is working with Rick Bayless on a new beer endeavor. Like I said, tens of people in here right now. There's so much expertise in front of me. I kind of don't know what to do. So we have been talking all about the craft beer scene in Chicago. We've talked about the industry. We've talked about the community aspect of it, which is really fascinating to me in particular. But I want to talk a bit, too, about because we have brewers here in the room. So we've talked with Dee about your big win lately at Goose Island and Jacob about your new endeavor. But, Brian, I want to hear from you a bit about Weiner Brewing because sustainability is such a big, big piece of that. Talk to us about that a bit.
Yeah, so we're located at the plant. A few people have heard of it. It's a Southside building that's kind of a small business incubator, but it's also all about sustainability. So the owner of the building had this idea of bringing in, you know, like-minded businesses that had anything related from food to any sort of liquids or any consumable item, and see how you could either use it and with waste, other companies within the building could use that waste for themselves, or we also have this anaerobic digester that's being built. And
for those who maybe don't use that phrase every single day, tell us right. What that is.
Right. The digester is basically this huge organic waste pit where you dump organic waste, meaning like food, things like in my industry, like spent grains, yeast. You dump it right into this pit, and the digester will begin to break it down with enzymes, and it'll create methane gas. And the methane gas will then be sent through a turbine, which is spun and then creates energy, which is then put on our grid. Or if we have, you know, too much of it, we can sell it back to the energy company. So that's the overall goal of this. And they're about halfway done with that project. And so what we did at Weiner Beer, we kind of worked around that entire plan. So we have a boiler that isn't necessarily a normal boiler. It can run on methane gas. So any of the methane gas that is created on this anaerobic digester, we can then pull and run our boiler off it rather than taking natural gas from people's gas. So the goal is to be completely utility free. And the other tenants in the building are doing the same thing as well. We have a coffee roaster called Four Letter Word. We have a few other businesses.
That's actually the name. He's not abbreviating that for radio. That's really
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's really Four Letter Word Coffee. And again, it's a really cool company. We all work together there. And people like the Pleasant House Bakery, they use my waste, like my spent yeast, to make bread. They use my spent grains to make briquettes where they cook in their oven. So it's kind of it's almost like this hippie culture down on the South Side. Creating all kinds of sustainability within the building itself.
That's very cool. I mean, I think that's such an interesting piece of it. And I love, you know, in the early part of the show, we were talking about, you know, have we kind of tapped out of innovation or have we reached peak beer already of all the creativity that's coming? But I don't think so. I think there's so many other pieces to it. And so as people are exploring and stepping into the craft beer world, I think it can be a little intimidating for people, even though it is a very accessible and welcoming community. You know, where in your expertise, and I'm asking this to the whole panel here, in your expertise, where do you think a good place to start is? Is that, learning about the different breweries and getting to know people in that? Or is it just to try? Or where do you fall on that?
Most places now, most bars out in Chicago and restaurants too, have pretty good beer lineups. I don't see people surviving much without having a good beer lineup. Even if you're some D-bag down in Lincoln Park, like your sports bar is going to have at least an IPA, you know? So more and more people are diversifying their beer selection at their places. So for me, it was just, I was going to Map Room. That was the place I went to. And you know, before there was craft beer, there was imports. There was some craft beer, but it wasn't, you know, really craft. It was local stuff from around the country. But I started with German imports and kind of worked my way there. And, you know, Michael mentioned this. craft beer is so accessible now. You've been saying this all night, and it really is. Anywhere you, any corner, like right next door to here, to the studio, is a place with like 100 different.
Right, Housenhood has a craft ton, beer, yeah. ton of beer.
So, I mean, for me personally, I always recommend Map Room. The bartenders are, you know, very, very knowledgeable, and they're patient, which is good, because you can go in there and just kind of, you know, let them know what you like. So, and they'll direct you the correct way.
A question that came up earlier in the show that I have to ask to Jacob and Dee, and that was, what was your gateway beer to craft beer? I put them on the spot. They don't know what to say.
I don't even really know how to say that. I mean, or answer that question. So I used to work actually before brewing. I was in the culinary industry as a chef and a cook, and I took a small hiatus and I worked at a specialty food store. And this was back in 2006 or 7, and there was not a whole lot of beer options there, but there was Dale's Pale Ale, and there was Sierra Nevada, and that was so shocking, and how I thought how immensely bitter it was, but I couldn't stop drinking it, and I think it just kind of, an appreciation started there, because it wasn't like what you drink in Texas, which is going to be Lone Star or something like that. It's something different, and it just kind of started there, and it never really stopped.
For me, it was more.
Oh, I'm going to turn your microphone on and everything. Sorry about that.
No worries. So for me, it was more of a style. Mm-hmm. I went to Brixie's as soon as I turned 21. It's a bar in Brookfield, and they always have 30 different craft beers on tap, plus tons of bottles. And I just became really good friends with the bartenders there, and he started me out with just tasting stouts. And honestly, I just had no idea that a beer can be so decadent and can have the flavors of like chocolate and roasty and coffiness. And so that was my first gateway to craft beer in general, was just being wild that those flavors can exist in a beer. So before that, I was drinking a lot of malt liquor, to be honest.
She admits
I was
it
living
freely.
In Cicero. And
drinking the malt liquor.
Yeah, Steel Reserves were like $2 for a 40 ounce. So.
Well, what I'm hearing really is that it's important to just kind of try and to learn and to be open to trying new flavors and new things and not being afraid to order a beer maybe you won't like.
The funny thing is that there's still people like your dad that are like, eh. If it's not Budweiser or Miller High Life.
Yeah, Brian, I'm still kind
it.
Of astounded by the fact your dad won't drink your
he's
beer.
He's probably listening right now, too.
Right, he's like he's being shamed, going, wait, I'll drink it.
You've given your son issues. I hope you're happy.
I see a lot of dads in tap rooms these days, though. Like, if there's one thing, like, there's a lot of dads out there that, you know, they're a Bud guy or an MGD guy or something, but there's, you know, their children come home at Christmas, they want to go to the local tap room, whatever that, you know, we're in a country with over 4,000 breweries now. And so many of them have tap rooms, which is kind of a new idea, that people are coming home over the holidays and they're taking their parents to these tap rooms because they want to go hang out there and the parents want to hang out with their kids. And that's where they're having their first craft beer experience. And even if they don't really, my father-in-law took him to Brewery Vivant in Grand Rapids, Michigan, first craft beer he ever had. And we tried a few things. He really hated them. He's a Miller Lite guy. He tried his first, it was a Pepper Saison from Brewery Vivant, something I would have never expected him to like. And he had that, and he was like, now this is interesting. So that just gives you a sense awesome. That you don't want to necessarily underestimate the people that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to kind of broaden the horizons of. They might jump to the end of the line, you know, faster than you realize, maybe faster than you did. But dads, especially, I see them in tap rooms, I see them get excited about what's happening from a business standpoint around them. The fact that something's made right down the street and they can look at the brewery when they walk in, that's an attraction to almost everybody.
It's family fun for everyone. Fun. It's a family bonding activity is drinking beer. My friends, we're talking all about the craft beer world of Chicago, and we are surrounded by these wonderful experts dropping their knowledge on us. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, more of this fun on 720 WGN. It's a Saturday night special. I'm Amy Gu. Thanks for being with us tonight. I love that Prohibition era jam we're listening to. It's so fun. Makes me want to Charleston. And we're listening to that because tonight we are talking all about the craft beer world here in Chicago. And we are learning a ton, and there's so much to it. But I think the narratives we're hearing the most, if you want to get into it, you just need to go try. You need to go drink to learn. And there's lots of places where you can do that. But you need to make friends with your bartenders and ask questions and be willing to try. But also, there's a great community around craft craft beer. And we are joined by many experts who are sharing their knowledge with us. And we have brewers, we have industry professionals, we have everything going on in this studio right now. Tons of people, way more guests than I normally have in here, which is very, very exciting. We have honorary co-host tonight, Jesse Valenciana, who is an author of two books, founder and leader of Mambacue, and a beer industry pro at Goose Island. Michael Kaiser, who's the founder of goodbeerhunting.com. Brian Taylor, the brewer behind Winer Brewing here in Chicago. D. Rodriguez, who's a Goose Island brewer. And Jacob Sembrano, who is the lead brewer for the latest endeavor with Rick Bayless. So we have tons of people happening here in the studio right now. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, we've been talking about community a lot tonight and accessibility, but I want to talk about the role that social media plays in the beer world because it's, laughing already. But it seems like there's, you know, if you look at the hashtag beer nerd, there's a lot. You can learn a lot just by looking at that because people are sharing what they're drinking. They're talking about it. They're kind of, it's like mini tasting notes really within a tweet. And a lot of people are, you know, blogging about it, I'm sure, to your chagrin, Michael, right? Lots of people are writing about beer.
The more the better.
Okay, that's good. That's a good attitude. I like that. I applaud that. It seems like there's such a huge role there with social media. And so it seems more than just amplifying a conversation already happening. It seems like the social media piece of it is a really, really essential one in the craft beer world.
There's two ways social media the way I see it is like, you know, there's a good healthy way where, you know, people talk about beers and that's like, you know, rosy picture. But then there's like a lot of negative stuff that is played out on social media. That's what kind of grosses me out. And I want to stay
in what
away
way
from
are people
media.
Trolling each other about beer?
Oh, there's so much trolling. You know, these guys that are in their mom's basement, just like they have opinions that are stronger and better than everybody else's. So especially now at a time where all these big companies are buying smaller breweries and it's like there's a switch now. Now this brewery is no longer good. Now it doesn't go based on beer anymore. Now people are being judged because of a business decision they've made.
Okay.
And it just kind of it just brings out all of the negative element of craft beer. So as much as there is this great community, you know, there's also this stuff that doesn't even seem real because it's out there on the internets.
Yeah, I don't know if that's unique to social media, though. I mean, we see more of it, but Jeremy Danner, who's a brewer and a marketing guy down at Boulevard Brewing, he always described Twitter as the bar that never closes.
And
you can imagine, like, as the hours go on, the bar environment gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty great and somewhat generous sort of description of what happens on beer Twitter. Beer Twitter is a real place. You know, it's the subsection of the conversation that's happening around beer. And it can be great. It can be really positive. It can be really informative. It can be really negative. All of those opinions already existed in a bar across, you know, everywhere around the world, except that the people who have maybe the worst personalities usually weren't surrounded by so many people when they were in the bar by themselves. Now they're surrounded by anybody, you know, that they can attach themselves to through social media. So it's really just a matter of, I guess, the accessibility of even things like negativity.
Yeah. There's also a good way, I think, too, you know, with social media, it's a really great way for breweries to really show their personality, too. You know, like, I haven't been in Colorado in a long time, and I should get over there, but it's just cool to see the different breweries and, like, what they, like, again, I'm getting a feel for the personalities of the breweries, so it's like, I want to check this place out. And Jeremy, perfect example. I mean, like, for him being the voice of Boulevard is amazing. He's hilarious. He's spot on so many points, and it's like, if you don't like Boulevard, you like their voice, you're going to check it out.
Yeah, and it's also a way for the little guy to show people who we are, you know? I mean, gone are the days of the Super Bowl $50 million ad, although I'm sure there's still going to be some ads this winter. But the main focus for, like, Winer Beer is to show people our everyday activities. And, you know, we do some cool stuff, and it's cool to show people what we do. If we're doing barrel work that day or adding fruit to a barrel, anything like that, it gets people involved and wants them to come check out what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you can sort of let people behind the scenes a little bit, they feel some degree of kinship with the product, whether that's beer or something else, you know. I mean, it's interesting that you kind of bring up the corporate part of it. I think that's kind of interesting because I've also picked up on that. I've just kind of looking at social media as an outsider looking at it. It seems like there's a group of people not necessarily – probably not working in the beer industry like yourselves, but a very devoted fan that feels like they have a stake in business decisions around the beer industry, which is really fascinating. And I think a lot of, you know, stakeholders and customers kind of feel that way. But I've never, I mean, imagine an airline merger generating that kind of outcry, right, of people really, you know, flipping out about that. And I mean, I think it, I don't begrudge anyone the right to make money. Right. Everybody starts their enterprise in hopes of it being profitable. So I don't begrudge anyone, you know, making big bucks on that or hooking up with a larger company in order to help distribution or something like that. And so is it that the distinction being made is whether or not the product changes when mergers happen and when larger companies get associated with smaller breweries?
I think those are all symptoms of a deeper issue, I think, and that is that what craft beer is experiencing now is it gets bigger and some actually sell to another company or partner up. And the backlash against that is the result of the seeds that were sown 20, 30 years ago in craft beer, which was all these smaller brewers said, vote with your dollars, fight corporate beer. And then some craft breweries ultimately grow and get more and more corporate, and some actually sell to larger corporations. And then they say, hey, be a little kinder to us. You know, we're just making business decisions. And so I think some consumers feel duped by that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are plenty of others, I think, that legitimately wonder if the beers are going to change in some way, the beers that they love, the ones that are their standbys, because there's not a whole lot of loyalty when it comes to craft beer. It's described as a very promiscuous sort of culture. We just try new beers all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a new and shiny object kind of thing.
So if there's a beer you love and you're loyal to it, the last thing you want that to do is change, because mm-hmm. there's probably so few beers you are loyal to. And so some of those concerns are completely legitimate, but most of those, I think, are the result of the success of the message of fight the revolution, and then suddenly you seem like you are the thing that
you
needs
are
to be
the
revolted
man.
Against. Yes, exactly.
And so is that just a matter of changing the narrative around it, whereas maybe 10 or 20 years ago it was fight big beer, now it's, what would you say it is now?
I would say it's explore, discover, enjoy great beer, get smarter about beer, appreciate it for what it is, and you know, everybody's got their own list of things that matter to them most about beer. For some people, it might be independence. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I don't begrudge anybody wanting to support an independent brewer. But if that's your number one, then you and I probably aren't going to necessarily have the same understanding of what beer is. Because for me, beer is a great, beautiful communal product you get to drink. It helps me travel around the world, and I get to see different cultures around beer. I mean, there's beers going back hundreds of years that are not independent by American craft standards, that are better than most of the beers on the planet. And so for me, it becomes a very complex notion of, you know, who's making that beer. I mean, I know people that work in Anheuser-Busch that I really respect. I know who makes that beer. And so that doesn't necessarily change my opinion of the end product in the same way it might if, you know, I'm friends with the guy down the street with a brewery. It's all a very complicated situation. I think everybody's got their own priorities.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think consumers are a lot more savvy now. You know, they want to know the behind-the-scenes stuff that you were talking about, Brian. They want to know who owns what. I think we see that in a lot of industries around a lot of products even. I mean, I think even like the thing that came to mind was, as you were saying, that was like how when Clorox bought Burt's Bees, everybody flipped out, but still was devoted to it because it was natural. But still it was Clorox. But still, you know, it was suddenly like Burt's Bees was the man, right? And I think that's just kind of a narrative around a lot of things when you feel like something has sold out, but yet we want the things we love to succeed, whether that's a beer or a Burt's Bees hand cream or lip balm or whatever, right? I think that's fair, and I think people, as consumers have gotten so savvy, they do demand that kind of information. They do kind of want to know those things. We are talking with all of these wonderful experts here, all about craft beer in Chicago, and we are gonna tap them for some predictions, because there've got to be some things on the horizons that experts like these guys know all about and that can tell us what's coming so we can stay ahead of that. So we will talk about that when we come back here on 720 WGN. It's a Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We're playing all the good Prohibition jams tonight because we're talking all about beer that's being brewed right here in Chicago. We're talking about craft beer. It is a big thing, and it is a fascinating and complex and nuanced industry that is very cool. And we have all these wonderful experts with us tonight who have been telling us all about their work in this field. Honorary co-host Jesse Valenciana, who is with Goose Island Beer Company and the founder and leader of Man Sambacue and author of two books you should definitely check out. Michael Kaiser, the founder of goodbeerhunting.com. Brian Taylor is the brewer behind Winer Brewing. D. Rodriguez is a Goose Island brewer. And Jacob Simbrano is a guy that's teaming up with Rick Bayless to do a very new and interesting beer endeavor. So we have all of these wonderful expert voices here in the studio with us this evening. And my friends, we have a caller. Hi, Barbara. You're on WGN.
Hi. Is this for me?
Yes, you're on WGN. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you. I have a couple of quick questions. What a wonderful panel you have this evening. I'd like to ask if there are any organic beers being brewed. And the other question is, please do a few things on pairing, because I really love having I'm not a beer drinker per se, but I love having the right kind of beer with, you know, certain things. And it's usually been beef, but I'd like their opinion.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to turn that over to the panel. Who would like to start with the organic beer? Michael, I think you. I'm
all
nominating
right.
You.
Well, there are some out there. Their names are going to escape me immediately, but there's very few of them just because it's very difficult, I think, to get the ingredients, you know, from hops and grain in an organic sense to brew those beers. But also just because people who tend to want to drink alcohol aren't necessarily interested in the most perfect items for their body. There's kind of an inverse relationship there. But there are some out there you'll see. I don't know. Does anybody know any particular brands?
I know Widmer does a gluten-free beer, and I think I want to say they do an organic beer. I remember brewing organic beers at Goose Island, and we actually did one for Whole Foods, and it was called like Lamar Street or something like
I've
that.
I've seen a couple of them
yeah.
at Whole Foods.
We quit brewing it because it was so difficult. You have to. Everything the organic grain touches has to be cleaned before you put that organic grain into the grist case. And so it became kind of a nightmare to do.
Probably a bit labor intensive.
Yeah, too. For sure.
Yeah.
Whole Foods is probably a great place to show. I mean, they have a great beer selection anyway. Mm-hmm. And beers that are organic tend to shout from the shelf that they are organic. That's sort of their reason for being. So it shouldn't be hard to spot them.
Definitely. All right. As for the pairings question, which was an excellent question, I'm so glad that Barbara asked, because it is also a question that I have, because we, I think for a long time only thought about wine pairings, but indeed beer pairing is, I would argue, a lot more complex than wine pairing and really very, very interesting. And so where would you start with that, Jesse?
I think the simple way is kind of having your food match the intensity, the flavor of the food match the intensity of the flavor of your beer. So, you know, if you're having something crazy like a blue cheese, pair it with an IPA. If you're having, Barbara said she likes steak, so, you know, you can play it safe and go with a brown ale. And, you know, there's also like the ABCs of beer pairing, accentuating, bridging, and contrasting. So accentuating, so if you're having like a Saison that tends to have more of a citrus kind of citrus notes to it, it goes with something with lemon in your dish, you know. Bridging is flavors that go together, like I said, you know, like a steak or a brown ale, something malty with that. And then contrasting is creating new flavors. So like a blue cheese and trying it with something completely, you know, bold, like maybe a sour ale that could scrape that blue cheese off your tongue.
All right. There's a lot to be done there. Is there a good resource that you know of if someone was kind of looking to get into the beer pairing idea? Is there, you know, a website you would start with?
Honestly, the internet is your best option. I mean, even for me, when I'm putting dinners together, it's like I look at what the menu is and then I have to pair it with beers. And there's so many options. So many people have done so many different things. A really good book is Tasting Beer. It's a very, good. It's
Randy Mosher,
Chicago guy, and he's awesome at giving advice as far as how food, the relationship between food and beer. So that's a good spot. But the internet, it's your friend. Embrace it.
Despite what you said earlier about people trolling about beer, the internet is your friend.
Talk trash to those trolls. And
Right. Stand up and fight back to them for sure. Well, so in the short time that we have left, indeed, this has gone by so fast, and I thank you all for being with us tonight. But in the short time that we have left, I wonder if you could all speak a bit to kind of what's next and what's exciting right now in the craft beer world for you in particular, and maybe what kind of a takeaway for listeners who have probably listened tonight and gotten excited and want to learn a lot more about craft beer and start trying it for themselves, maybe where they would start or where they would look first, things like that.
Ladies first. Come on, Dee.
Honestly, we have totally put her on the spot.
Yeah. Honestly, just go out. The way that I did it was just get together with a bunch of friends. I like to do tasting. It's kind of hard to get into the craft beer when you're out by yourself and you have to drink a full pint of everything that you have. So what I did was I got a group of friends to go out with us and we'll get something that we were interested in and kind of just shared those beers together. And
right. That way you don't have to commit if you don't love it, right?
Yeah. You just get to taste a little bit of everything and kind of the best part of that too is discussing it with everyone. Everyone has a different palate. So don't ever be afraid to kind of just tell your opinions about it because not everyone, like I said, has the same palate, but you learn from what other people are tasting as well.
Definitely. All right.
The one thing I love about craft beer is how each region of the earth has a certain form of beer that is part of their culture. And so, you know, it's not necessarily trendy or, you know, what's like what at our brewery, what we're doing as far as sour beer is concerned or anything like that. It's more about just checking out your regions of the earth and seeing what they're drinking. And I think that's super cool. Like going to Belgium and seeing, you know, the Cantillon brewery and just each country, especially in Europe, has their own totally different style of brewing beer. And it's almost never ending.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a theme of community here. When I travel, I rarely ever do any research before I go, but I'll just pick a brewery. And when I land, I'll go there and I'll start talking to somebody at the bar and ask them who their favorite breweries are locally. And then usually I go to those breweries and usually with that person. So you can very easily pick up a guide to a local market, a local city, make a friend for life out of it and go have some great beer and food. And so I would say don't be shy about asking somebody who they like and where they go.
I'd kind of say the adventurous brewer, and that's I think what we can all look forward to for better or worse. You see a lot more brewers playing with mixed fermentations, fruit re-fermentations, and really breaking their comfort level for the sake of creating, you know, something drinkable or not. But I think that pushing ourselves to become better brewers and breaking our comfort levels is something that we're going to see a lot more of because now I think if you want to continue to create beer, you can't just stick to the classics. You really have to kind of keep reaching and working with new flavors, new ingredients, new yeasts, new different kinds of casks. It's all just only in helping us become better and more knowledgeable.
And unlimited possibilities, really.
Correct.
With all
yeah.
of those different combinations. What would you say?
I say check out everything new that's coming out, like the wine or beers of the world. Every brewer has a different story, how they got to where they are, and it's interesting to hear their stories. Read Michael's blog, Good Beer Hunting, because it's a great,
it
you want to read
great
about beer,
resource,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on top of that, I like to go and try an American, a new version of something, and then go in and try and, you know, the origins of this beer. So what's the difference between an American wheat beer and a Weiss beer, you know, stuff like that. And just learning more about beer. I think that's the key. Learn about beer, find out what you like, and go try the heck out of everything.
And what would you say is probably the next thing we're going to see in Chicago in particular around craft beer? If you had to just guess what we're going to see from this community, where would you venture a guess?
A brewery on Mars.
That's definitely happening.
I don't know. I'm excited to see what's going to be happening. I mean, because you think you can plan out what's going to happen in any kind of scene, and then something happens and it just makes a crazy 90-degree turn somewhere else.
Yeah, I think we're going to keep deep. I think what Chicago's great at is beer and food together, chefs and brewers working together, and I think we're going to go so far off the edge of that at some point. It'll be unrecognizable to most of the rest of the country. I mean, whether it's Jacob's concept with Rick Bayless, a brew pub around the Frontera group, whether it's chefs and brewers collaborating. Band of Bohemia is sort of a brew pub with a high-end chef and a high-end beer menu. I think we're going really, really far with beer and food from an actual creative standpoint, not just pairing. Really trying to explore all the sort of relationships between those things.
Definitely. And that'll be a cool place to be, I think, for sure.
Yeah, brew pubs for sure, because, drink it incredibly fresh at the source and have some food while you're doing it in a good environment. So brew pubs is, I can